This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. The SARS epidemic has faded, but health officials around the world remain on alert for its possible return this fall. As few other diseases have, severe acute respiratory syndrome focused attention on the interconnectedness of the world and the importance of improving the health of all people, not just those who can pay for it. This shift in public awareness is translating into more support for health programs that reach the developing world.
This week, the United Nations World Health Organization, fresh from its victory against SARS, announced that it will spend $100 million to speed distribution of AIDS drugs to 3 million people. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said he hoped it would set an example for richer nations.
We cannot claim that competing challenges are more important or more urgent. We cannot accept that something else came up that forced us to place AIDS on the back burner. Something else will always come up.
Kofi Annan speaking yesterday to a special meeting of the UN General Assembly on HIV/AIDS. Also this week, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced hundreds of millions of dollars in grants to fight malaria, tuberculosis, and AIDS in Africa, and we're obliged to acknowledge that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation contributes funds to support NPR health coverage.
The billions of dollars now being spent are beginning to transform a moribund and fragmented global public health system. Some say change can't come too fast. Over the past few decades, new diseases have been emerging at a rate of about one a year. This year, it was SARS. What it might be next year, nobody can predict. But scientists are hoping to catch that next new epidemic before it spreads too far. Today, we begin a five-part series on changes in global health after SARS and preparations for the next new big outbreak. NPR's Richard Knock spent time in Geneva, Switzerland, at the nerve center of the global effort to track disease outbreaks.
Dr. Mike Ryan navigates through the coffee line in the basement of a low-rise office building. Upstairs is the world headquarters for detecting disease outbreaks. It's something new in the annals of public health. Ryan heads the fast-paced operation. He says it runs on caffeine.
So do you want a coffee?
Love one, yeah.
Ryan's a fleshy Irishman with reddish-brown hair and an easy gap-toothed smile. He's coordinator of the Global Outbreak Alert and Response Network. Despite its grand name, it's a shoestring operation with only a few dozen staff.
No. Okay.
It was formally established only 3 years ago, but SARS put it on the map. Over a cup of French roast, Ryan says his mission is to speed up the world's response to disease outbreaks.
In an outbreak, the timelines are so tight. Epidemics develop and evolve in hours, days, and weeks. And we have those timescales to respond appropriately. You know, the results of our mistakes are buried in graves, and it's not like you lose money in next year's budget. If you miss a chain of transmission in an Ebola outbreak, people die.
Ryan and the Global Alert team are not the bland bureaucrats typical of Geneva. They're veteran disease warriors who often fly to the scene of hair-raising emergencies like Ebola. They know what it's like to watch helplessly as new diseases spread and kill. Danger is part of the job description.
All of us have been in the field on hemorrhagic fever outbreaks, seen people infected, and there's nothing worse. The death itself is some kind of a release. It's the horror of the exposure. Lying there in your bed, wondering, did I jab myself? And it's a horrible, isolating feeling.
Out of such personal encounters, a few people here decided WHO needed to be more aggressive in fighting disease outbreaks. Ryan says under the old system, Geneva was too passive.
Historically, surveillance at national or global level has been based on the concept of formalized reporting. A doctor sees a case and he fills in a form and he sends that form up through the system, and at some point somebody sees that form and sees a form from another doctor and puts two and two together and there's an outbreak. And that's the classic concept of how surveillance is done.
In practice, the information often didn't flow. Or if it did, it was at a glacial pace. As recently as 1998, it took WHO 6 months to find out about an epidemic of relapsing fever in Sudan. More than 400,000 people got sick and 2,000 died. Those failures, and there were many, troubled Ryan and others at WHO. Now Ryan says his people go after any information they can get, trolling for what they call rumors of disease. These days, Ryan and his crew often find out about disease outbreaks even before nation's own health departments do. Clues come from the internet, through email, from news reports and informal contacts.
And it's really sifting through that information and trying to pick out the signal from the noise, trying to pick out that particular event that has certain qualities and certain attributes that may mean it's a serious outbreak from all of the other events that may be just background noise. And that's quite a considered process, and the group have to do that, and they have to be correct. We can't afford to miss big ones, and at the same time we can't afford to be following up all kinds of red herring outbreaks.
Okay, good morning everybody. First item, El Salvador.
Room 405. This is the Global Alert's nerve center. The team gathers here every morning at 9. It's an unremarkable office, jammed with desks and computers. No large screen TVs or flashing lights. In the middle, there's a conference table that seats only 10. Others stand around the edges. The setting's mundane, but the atmosphere is sometimes dramatic.
Meningitis, Belarus, 25 cases, mostly in children. Then we have Congo cholera.
Dr. Kandabara Kamara runs through the latest reports.
Sierra Leone, yellow fever, one confirmed case. We have 32 suspect cases, 59 listed. Samples.
Suddenly, the tone changes. Something's up in Canada.
Then we have Canada. We have influenza-like illness.
Frantic whispers as officials ask me to turn off my tape recorder.
Could you switch off the pencil?
The moment's revealing. What goes on in this room can have serious consequences all across the globe, so they don't want any premature talk of new SARS cases in Canada to get into the media. With the recorder off, one of the team runs through the known facts. 143 patients and staff at a British Columbia nursing home have come down with a respiratory illness. Several patients died. The sickness didn't look like SARS, but a dozen people have tested positive for the SARS virus. Questions fly. What did the chest x-ray show? Could the lab tests be wrong? How soon can we get confirmation from another lab? Canadian health officials will answer questions at a teleconference that afternoon. As the meeting breaks up, they say it's okay to turn the tape recorder back on again. There's a definite air of here we go again.
Have a nice day, everybody.
The group disperses to chase down today's rumors and reports. Epidemiologist Thomas Grine says the Global Alert team has had to get used to a punishing pace.
The speed with which we can disseminate share information is unprecedented. So the entire timeliness of the response has shifted dramatically to much, much higher gear.
One key to Global Alert's nimbleness is a computer program, much like Google, but with a difference.
This program scans the web for news on outbreaks or rumors on outbreaks.
Kandabara Kamara demonstrates the program. It crawls the web, looking for clues in seven languages, key words such as Ebola, outbreak, epidemic, plague, or anthrax. It's a simple idea, but nobody had thought to do it before.
So basically, I'm looking at the titles, and any title that we feel international implications, we open them up. Okay, diarrhea has broken out in an alarming proportion in Harar, Porash.
More than half the disease outbreaks that WHO hears about come from this web crawler. It's all raw stuff, unverified, and often wrong. But Kamara says it kickstarts the response to outbreaks.
So that the disease possibly can be nipped in the bud, so it's not exported to other countries. So basically saving lives all over.
Having up-to-the-minute information saves lives by allowing authorities to isolate cases, quarantine their contacts, and step up infection control. Using these classic public health measures, SARS was conquered in just 4 months. But right now, people here are worried the new methods may sometimes work too well, producing a flood of false alarms, such as when flu season hits while the world is primed for the reappearance of SARS, because the symptoms are often exactly the same, and there's no quick diagnostic test to distinguish SARS from the flu. So how will WHO sort it out? Dr. Angela Mariana says they've adopted a novel strategy. She heads Global Alert's epidemiology team, and she says the SARS strategy is different from what they'd do if they were monitoring for cholera, plague, or yellow fever. They're going to watch for SARS in certain high-risk groups.
Unfortunately, healthcare workers are sentinel people for another outbreak. Unless there is some very unusual change in the behavior of this virus, should we see it again, it's very unlikely that we won't get healthcare workers coming down with the disease, unfortunately. And that's why our approach to the post-outbreak period alert system mechanism is to focus on groups that are likely to be the canaries.
And when those clusters emerge, WHO says countries should do lab tests to confirm SARS or rule it out. But it's an imperfect solution because healthcare workers get common respiratory illnesses too. There may be too many clusters to be meaningful. And ruling out SARS is easier said than done. It's 5 in the evening in Geneva, 8 a.m. in Vancouver. Members of the Global Alert team have spent the day trying to figure out whether or not SARS has come back in North America. Now they're spilling out of an hour-long teleconference with Canadian health officials.
Simon!
The team's back in action, trying to figure out what to say to the world about this latest development. Mike Ryan says the Canadian situation is an interesting challenge, but it doesn't look like SARS this time.
In fact, we're not seeing anyone that, just on our discussions with the Canadians, who wouldn't even meet our case definition clinically. So we have to be very careful not to cry wolf here.
In fact, WHO will eventually conclude the Vancouver outbreak was the common cold, not SARS. Whatever happens with SARS this fall and winter, Ryan says the real challenge is not to let SARS-2, as they're calling it, hijack the global alert operation again.
We can't overfocus on SARS. SARS is a great lesson. SARS is a shot across our bows. But it's not the only player in the park, and we have to realize we need now to look at health as a security issue. We need governments to understand that there's not that someone with a gun on your border is not the only threat to your national security.
There's the ever-present threat of emerging diseases. They can slip across borders like terrorists. Once inside, they can kill civilians, disrupt economies, and collapse healthcare systems. Nations are beginning to understand. In May, WHO's member states voted unanimously to increase Global Alert's budget from a paltry $50,000 to $7 million a year. With outside funds, that'll total around $17 million. Most people in public health would consider that a spectacular bargain. Richard Knox, NPR News.